Deutsche Welle. Living Planet.
Hello and welcome to Living Planet. I'm your host, Charlotte Lomas. This week we're getting engaged and you're all invited to the engagement party. Hooray! That's right, we're getting engaged in the fight against climate change. This September, the United Nations will host an emergency climate summit. UN Secretary Ban Ki-moon will gather world leaders in New York City to try to lay out a plan for battling climate change. In the lead-up to those meetings, Living Planet is looking closely at some of the major drivers and effects of climate change. In our first episode of our summer series, we talked about plastics and their effect on our climate and environment. Then we looked at the state of the world's future food and how insects might soon become a staple meal for everyone. This week, on our special edition of Living Planet, we're getting hitched to climate change action. Fundraisers, tree planting activities, protests, there are so many ways people are getting engaged in the fight against climate change. But some people simply aren't engaging at all. And how can we blame them? Climate change is already a huge issue and a complex one at that. Added to this, governments are moving too slowly to meet their commitments to reducing dependence on fossil fuels in order to shift to more renewable energy sources. Meanwhile, scientists are telling us that climate change is already here right now. Its effects are being felt across the globe and we're running out of time. Put in this context, any action we as individuals take against climate change feels so small and insignificant, right? Well, for those of you out there nodding your heads in agreement, you're not alone. Renee Lertzman, a US author on the psychological dimensions on climate change, says the complex nature of the issue has left a lot of people feeling helpless and disengaged.
So people are very overwhelmed by climate change because it appears to be really out of our control. So the way that we are used to thinking about climate change issues easily can lead us to feel and perceive that there's not a lot that we can do.
But at a psychological level, this reaction to climate change is in fact incredibly natural.
As a basic human response, if we perceive there to be an issue or a problem, we naturally withdraw, we naturally turn away and sort of remove ourselves from the situation.
The term that often gets thrown around is apathy, to describe those who disengage. But Lertzman reckons this is an unhelpful term in talking about attitudes towards climate change.
I think apathy is a very damaging and inaccurate way of thinking about how we are responding and relating with climate change threats, because it's not taking the time and the energy to really investigate and to really look under the surface and to say, you know, what might actually be going on here. You know, we all as human beings have deep investment in our planet. I mean, just by virtue of being human beings. And so when we label people as apathetic, we're really not taking the time and energy to consider that actually these issues are very scary and can be very overwhelming, and that one of the most natural responses could be to tune out and to be numb.
But climate change is a huge issue. And if so many of us are feeling overwhelmed, disengaged, or helpless, what hope do we have of preventing it? Are we all just doomed? Fortunately not. There are plenty of people around the world taking action. Ro Randall, a psychotherapist in the UK, has created her own kind of engagement gatherings to tackle the issue of climate anxiety. She set up workshops called Carbon Conversations, which focus on climate change communication and community engagement. So, Ro, how do climate conversations work and what gets talked about?
It's talking about the impact that our day-to-day, everyday lives have on the climate. People come together to talk about how they feel about these difficult issues and what they can do to change the impact they have. Through conversation, we have a lot of materials which we use in the groups which show people where the emissions are and what the actions are which they can do to affect those. but we talk about what the obstacles are and what the process is of making those changes.
It sounds a bit like group therapy. Who are the people attending Carbon Conversations and what are their reasons for coming?
The people who come are from the 15% of the population who are concerned about climate change but don't know what to do. A young person who's heard something about climate change is upset and concerned, has tried to talk about it to their friends and has been rebuffed and doesn't know what to do. An old person who all their lives has tried to live an ethical life and finds themselves confronted by a daughter who's moved to Australia. A middle-aged person with children who is suddenly terrified about the future for their children growing up in this uncertain world.
Why is climate change so overwhelming for people?
I think it produces anxiety. It's alarming. If you think about the challenges of climate change, people meet it with shock. If you say to somebody, your carbon footprint is 15 tons, we need it to be 1 ton. And that means they go, well, how do I do that? And they turn away from it. Because if you tell people that they've got to spend money doing up their house, that they can't fly, that their commute is unsustainable, they will just turn up their hands in horror and go, I can't do anything about this. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about what's happening. I don't want to think that it's my lifestyle that is causing these problems. And I think it's so that it's about the anxiety and the conflict inside people that is produced by a difficult issue like climate change that I think is at the heart of it.
Well, we've been told the different ways we can contribute as individuals: switch off lights and appliances, don't use plastic bags, recycle, ride bicycles, take public transport instead of driving, change the way we consume, go vegetarian or vegan, invest money in renewable energy. But even when we do all of these things, it still doesn't feel enough. So Carbon Conversations allows a space for people to vent their anxieties, but does it offer any practical support for how individuals can take action to reduce their individual carbon footprint?
These aren't things which they will do in a couple of weeks. These are things which might take place over a number of years. So somebody might be looking at the unsustainability of their life generally and saying, well, at the moment I've got a 40-mile commute to work. Over the next 5 years, can I look at changing my work or moving house so that I don't have that anymore?
So looking at the bigger picture, how do we change the conversation about climate change from one of fear and anxiety to one of engagement and action?
I think climate change has suffered from being labelled as an environmental issue. And so you can think about it, if people think about it as, oh, doing my bit to save nature or something, I think it's quite easy to reject it. It's an issue which needs to be seen as a big political issue, as an issue which actually affects all aspects of life. It's not just about so-called saving the environment. It's actually about what kind of society do we want to create? And, of course, people have different views about that, about what would be a just, equal society.
That was psychotherapist Ro Randall there talking about climate conversations. Well, from one engagement to the next, we meet Ellen Sandel, a young, dedicated environmentalist from the Australian Greens Party, who is tackling the issue of climate change head-on in politics. Australia is one of the world's biggest coal producers and the first country to repeal a tax on carbon. Sandel aims to put renewable energy at the top of the political agenda. DW reporter Pavel Schrey brings us her story from Melbourne.
I was born in Alice Springs, which is right in the middle of Australia in the desert, in the Northern Territory. But as a child, my family moved to a place called Mildura, which is right in the middle of the desert, but it's a bit of an oasis because it's on the Murray River. you get a lot of the desert environment, but also a lot of the issues associated with the river, particularly over-irrigation, a lot of salinity. It's a really big primary production area. Yeah, kind of the food bowl of Victoria. I pretty much grew up in drought. Pretty much my entire childhood and adolescence we were in drought. Everyone thought that it was going to break, but after 10 years of drought you start to realise that this is the new normal and that this is what climate change looks like. Well, a drought in a place like Mildura just means no rain and no water. We were lucky because we had the Murray River, which is the biggest river in Australia, flowing through our town, but there's only so much water that you can take out of the river before you can't take any more. So like most country kids, if you want to go to university, you have to leave town, you have to leave home and go to the big city. I did some classes in climate science and pretty quickly discovered that it was a really dire problem. And I started to really connect the dots between what I'd seen at home in Mildura with the drought and with the health of the river deteriorating, and realising that that was not just a drought, that was climate change. I decided that we needed a bigger movement.
Let's take you to South Australia now, where it seems nearly everyone is keen to replace that state's ageing brown coal-fired power stations with solar thermal energy.
Helen Sandell is the National Director of the Australian Youth Climate Coalition. Thank you for joining us this morning.
The Australian Youth Climate Coalition, or AYCC, is a national organisation in Australia, and it has about 100,000 members, young people all around the country who want to do something on climate change. One of the things I'm really proud of doing is helping to get renewable energy on the agenda in a big way. We did a walk all the way from Port Augusta to Adelaide. Port Augusta's this small town literally in the middle of the outback, and it's a small town that has a small coal-fired power station. And there's been a lot of problems with the power station, very high asthma rate, very high cancer rate, and people have attributed that to those coal-fired power stations being in the middle of town. And their mayor, her husband died of lung cancer, and she herself was dying of lung cancer. She had become this incredible advocate for getting rid of the coal-fired power stations, and they actually wanted to build Australia's first solar thermal plant. We had nearly 100 people from all around the country come to Port Augusta and walk to Adelaide, 325 kilometres. It took us 2 weeks, 14 days, walking through the Australian outback, through all the little towns along the way, ending up in Adelaide with this huge rally for renewable energy. The South Australian government, who had been very pro-coal, actually decided that they were in favour of a solar thermal plant. We're also already seeing so many climate impacts, particularly in our neighbours in the Pacific. I met this one woman whose name was Ursula, and she comes from the Carteret Islands off PNG, in a village there that had several thousand people. And I met her 7 years ago, and she was raising money to buy some land on mainland Papua New Guinea so that she could actually move her entire village there because her crops were being inundated with salt water and with all the king tides and the sea rising. The island was becoming uninhabitable. I heard from her earlier this year that she's actually done that. She's bought that land and moved her entire village, moving several thousand people and their home that they're leaving. It's their culture, their security, everything that they know. We have no choice but to work to try and adapt. I'm hopeful that we can tackle climate change. I know that we have to. This is a matter of protecting our economy, protecting our agriculture, protecting the beautiful places that we live in, and protecting us and our children. So we don't have any choice. We have to do it, and I know that we can.
Our next engagement story comes from Chile, where a group of people have founded a new country this year. It's called the Glacier Republic, and it's comprised of all of Chile's glaciers. Now, we're talking about a lot of glaciers here. Chile is a long, narrow country stretching across the Andes Mountains and is home to 82% of South American glaciers. So far, the Glacier Republic has 133,000 citizens, and they even have their very own Glacier Republic passports. A legal loophole enabled Greenpeace Chile to establish the new country in a campaign to protect Chile's glaciers. Eilish O'Neill dropped by the Glacier Republic's embassy in Santiago to catch up with its ambassador, Matias Asun, who's taken climate change engagement to new heights.
Chile's southern Patagonia is home to thousands of white, snow-covered glaciers. And in its northern deserts, sheets of rock glacier stretch across dry, barren peaks. Some of these glaciers are thousands of years old, constantly moving, slowly creaking, sliding, and shifting. But changes in the world's climate are causing them to melt. That's why thousands of Chileans have stepped up to protect the glaciers. A group of activists in Chile's capital city, Santiago, wants to rescue the country's ice fields. Welcome to the embassy of the República Glaciar, or Glacier Republic. Greenpeace Chile director Matias Asun is the Republic's ambassador in Chile.
The Glacier Republic is a real country. A state has to have a population, territory, a government, and the ability to establish diplomatic relations. We fulfill all four conditions.
The borders of this new republic are marked out by the edges of the glaciers, and citizenship is open to anyone who applies. All you have to do is pledge allegiance to the new country on the Greenpeace website. So far, the Glacier Republic has more than 130,000 citizens. More than 80% of South America's glaciers lie on Chilean territory. But the country has no law to protect them. As climate change melts the ice flats, another threat is tearing apart these pristine ecosystems. Mining companies are building roads across the glaciers, causing the ice to splinter. And they dump waste on them, heating the ice and polluting the meltwater.
Glaciers are fundamental not only for the equilibrium of ecosystems and of temperatures, they're also extremely important in a situation of significant climate change.
The white glaciers reflect sunlight, keeping global temperatures down. And glacial melt also maintains Chile's rivers and streams, pushing a flow of water into the country's dams, thereby generating the electricity that lights up homes and powers local farms. That's why Asun and his colleagues decided to found the Glacier Republic.
The idea came out of the desperation of understanding that the problem was extremely serious, because not only were the glaciers in danger, not only was it important to protect them quickly because of the issue of climate change, not only was it necessary to get a law through Congress, which is always difficult in itself, but also people simply didn't know about the issue.
And it worked. Chileans started paying attention.
Chile se espantó.
Chile was shocked. How can it be that we haven't protected our glaciers? That's unacceptable. How can it be? How can it be that on top of that, mining is destroying them? We're going to sacrifice our glaciers to mining? No, 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 everyone said. No, that's bad. We're going to fix that.
Asun has devoted himself to climate protection.
This is the most important struggle of this century. There is no doubt that this struggle is going to define human history.
News of the Glacier Republic made it to the highest levels of Chile's government. President Michelle Bachelet has now promised to introduce new glacier protection legislation this year. And she'll probably hear from us soon again. He plans to keep using creative activism to alert Chileans about the impacts of climate change.
I'm not alone. Greenpeace tests the limits of what is possible. And, well, that in itself is not only very satisfactory, it's also very entertaining.
98% of Chile's glaciers are in retreat. Several of the smaller ones are expected to disappear altogether very soon. But Asun isn't discouraged. As ambassador of the Glacier Republic, he plans to save as much glacial territory as he can. Alicia O'Neill, DW, Santiago, Chile.
Next, we head to Latvia, where the issue of climate change doesn't appear to be a big concern for the population. In a recent poll, just 12% of Latvians said climate change was the single most serious problem of the world and should be a priority for the government. The number of people who value climate protection over swift economic growth for their country has almost halved in the past 7 years. That said, there are some Latvians in this small state trying to motivate others to engage in climate protection. DW's Gerda Gelzis met up with a couple of climate change activists in Riga.
Waves lap against a white sandy beach in the Gulf of Riga. Latvia's Baltic Sea coast curves around a considerable part of the country, and here the shore stretches as far as the eye can see. 29-year-old Elina Vansan walks along the sand, her pink scarf and dark hair flying around in the wind as she points towards the horizon.
And just imagine that. Our little Latvia has 500 kilometers of such coastline.
Vansan runs the local environmental NGO Latvian Green Movement. She says climate change is already taking its toll on this stretch of coast.
Latvia is without a doubt affected by climate change, and it has a direct effect on the quality of the country's coastline. It's already been proven that coastal erosion is happening in some places, and that is obviously caused by climate change.
For the past 5 years, Vansan has been actively engaged in climate protection. And while she's always been interested in environmental issues, it was by accident that she became a climate change activist.
Every so often, you're in the right place at the right time, and you meet the right people. Actually, I could say that climate protection chose me, and I got engaged in the work very quickly. And at some point, I realized that it is a very significant part of my life.
Vansan works with an organization called Latvian Green Movement to raise public awareness about climate change, and to also encourage local officials and non-government organizations to work together on the issue, which she says isn't easy.
That's the hidden aspect of my work. It's not just occasional campaigns, rather continuous and intensive work.
Though the work is demanding, Vansan's motivation and enthusiasm for the environment are what drive her.
If I didn't believe in the idea and in the things I do, then I wouldn't be able to do the work. It's the people who try, act, and don't give up that are the main source of inspiration and motivation for me in Latvia. There's a lot you can learn from such people.
39-year-old activist Jānis Brizga, who works with the Latvian NGO Green Freedom, has been involved in the country's green movement for decades. Over the years, he's tackled all sorts of global and local issues, but more recently, most of his time has been taken up by efforts to curb greenhouse gas emissions.
Climate change is one of the most important issues in environmental protection at the moment. If you compare Latvia to more industrialized countries, then its emissions are perhaps not that high. But still, energy, electricity and heating are among the sectors that produce the largest emissions. But we have achieved a rather large reduction of emissions since the beginning of the 1990s when the Soviet Union collapsed.
But according to Brizga, CO2 emissions have risen in certain areas. This is because more and more people are choosing to travel by car. And a big problem, he says, is that only 12% of Latvians believe the government should be taking action to mitigate global warming.
I think that it's connected to people's priorities. They are first and foremost concerned about their work and their income. these questions have a higher priority than climate change.
When it comes to climate change, many people still have doubts about whether it exists. Vansan says this makes it difficult to talk about climate change and relate it to people's daily lives.
Quite often people think about climate change as some faith or religion. They ask, do you believe in climate change? Like it's the same as asking, do you believe in God? But when you have the facts and the knowledge, and you see the causes and effects and the role of the people, you realize that you do have a big choice.
But Vansan is an optimist. She hopes more and more Latvians will start taking up the fight to protect the planet and the coastline in the Gulf of Riga. Both her and Brizga believe that small steps are the only way to achieve change. Jatars Jēles, DW, Riga, Latvia.
Well, with all these people playing their part in the fight against climate change, it doesn't seem like it's all doom and gloom after all. Maybe getting engaged is something each and every one of us can do. Wahel Hamadan, director of the International Climate Action Network, thinks so. He says it could be as simple as just having a conversation about climate change.
I think people underestimate their power. Every person, unfortunately, underestimates their power. For me, at the moment, the best thing anyone can do on climate change is to talk about it. And this is actually the problem, that we don't talk about it a lot.
And so the more of us who talk about climate change, the more this engages others, including decision makers.
The problem is that most politicians around the world are not hearing from their public that climate change is a concern. So if you talk about it, you can make it as a concern. It's not an issue of available money. The problem is political will. And political will is shaped around the concerns of the public.
The emergency UN climate summit in September is all about getting politicians to take action. By engaging ourselves at a personal, local level, we can increase pressure on politicians, industry and decision makers to take swift action. This is Well, that's all we have time for on today's engagement special of Living Planet. We'll have more on this topic in our next episode of our summer climate series. Don't forget you can download episodes or replay them online at dw.de. I'm Charlotte Lomas. We'll be back again next week with more news and stories about the environment. Until then, from all of us here in the studio in Bonn, thanks for listening.
Crowd pushing through your arteries.